The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. So, you know, when we were gone?
Yeah.
Tennis was in the news.
Yeah, I saw it, yeah. Yeah.
People were talking about tennis. Think about the last time people were really talking about tennis. McEnroe.
Well, it was kind of a McEnroe moment, really. So, is it sexist because you lose? You know, calling the line judge sexist?
Did you see what Martina Navratilova said?
What?
She said that we cannot measure ourselves by what we think we should be able to get away with.
Ooh. Well, okay then.
Because I was thinking about that as a golfer.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing. Well, it doesn't matter what somebody else got away with. It's not appropriate for me to act that way. On the tennis. And yeah. Tennis is much like golf, is it not? No, golf actually has more etiquette than tennis. I mean, he's the professional.
There's less grunting in golf.
No, yeah. Last time I remember, what was it? It was a golf tournament last year. It had to be the PGA.
Yeah.
You see, and John Daly, see when he threw his club into Lake Michigan? He missed a shot. He just took it to the club.
How many clubs are in that lake?
I believe it was Lake Michigan. I can't think of the name of the... Is it Whistling Straits? Mm. But think about it. I was like, well, you know something, that people are drawn to personality.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, look how huge that was. And I mean, it was almost as if we had gone back 40 years to McEnroe. It really was. Yeah. I was like, where am I? Everybody's paying attention to tennis again. And then remember when you get McEnroe and Jimmy Connors on the same court?
Mm-hmm.
But people were talking about tennis.
Serena Williams calling the umpire a liar and a thief.
And a thief.
And it's sexist. And... Well, it's been a while, you know, since we've had that kind of behavior, really, in tennis.
Look, I have to say this. I understand how people want etiquette on the tennis court and how it's out of line to do that. And you can get into, you know, again, I've never really followed tennis that much since the last screaming match.
Yeah.
But when you see somebody like Serena Williams with everything that she has won before, in fact, still gets so angry and is so competitive,
right,
that they lose it. Mm-hmm. She doesn't lose it all the time. She wasn't a McEnroe.
No.
There's part of me that sits back and says, I love it. I mean, there's a purity in that type of competitiveness where you want to win so bad when you've won so many things before and you think that, maybe I could coast right here. And it's like the true competitor just that. And I've always said this, and I know for me, and I was never that, you know, great in sports, but for me, losing was always much worse. The feeling of losing was always much worse than any feeling of winning.
Yeah. The feeling of victory for me was enough. You know, losing was for me the lasting lesson, or one of, I guess, a series of lasting lessons in my life.
And so, I mean, you can get into, I mean, how many different referees are there, and, you know, as to who is sexist with whom, and I'm sure they know, because they know which referees they can get away with stuff, and they probably know, because they've been around that long with these referees, to know the ones they can get away with. In every sport, they know it. Mm-hmm. They know which referees they can get away with and which ones they don't. So I can't compare that individual, and to make that allegation overall, I haven't watched enough tennis to make that decision, to that informed decision or observation.
Well, I saw someone doing the analysis, essentially the simple analysis on Twitter, and it's somebody that was familiar with tennis and had been familiar with this series of matches here, and they were saying that, look, you were just outplayed, and you were angry you were being outplayed, saying that essentially in the direction of Williams.
Right.
You know, she was just upset that she had not played her best and could not outdo her opponent.
And so, yeah, so you could call it a sore loser. You could call it ultra competitive. There's a part of me that sits, and when I see that kind of passion from a professional that doesn't matter what they've won before, though, they get so angry. There is part of me that says that's a good thing to have inside of you if you want to succeed at that level.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That flame that's in you, that's at the point of, well, as I've always said, when I used to miss a golf shot, I had the rage of a serial killer directed at myself.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's golfed with me, I've said that to them, and they all laugh at it because, like, oh, yeah. So that kind of, you just. Now, that didn't help me in golf. It actually hurt me. I had to get rid of that because that hurt my. So I had to train myself to get rid of that rage. But the only reason I brought tennis up was to get to golf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was my excuse to get to golf. I really didn't want to talk about tennis at all.
Did we get there? I wasn't listening.
Yes, we did. Okay. Because there was a survey done of all the professional golfers.
Yeah.
Did you vote for Trump?
Oh, here we go.
Yes, 56%.
Mm-hmm.
No, 12%.
Mm-hmm.
Ineligible. Because there's so many foreign golfers. 18% didn't vote. 14%.
Mm-hmm.
The most common quote, he was the lesser of two evils.
Mm-hmm.
If he runs again in 2020, will you vote for him? Yes, 42%. No, 20%. Ineligible, 19%. Undecided, 14%. Won't vote, 5%. Isn't that interesting when you ask, didn't vote, 14%. Who won't vote the next time? Only 5%.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you it's still around 14% for the next election.
Yeah, because you have the undecideds, and some of those won't vote.
Most frequent answers, I'm voting for Trump. I'm not a citizen, but if I could, I wouldn't be. It wouldn't be for Trump. I won't vote for Trump, but I'll still vote Republican. And the best quote, he's made me some money. That's all I care about.
Lowering taxes.
Let me see. What was the one? What was the other one? Have you ever played a tournament round hungover?
Hmm.
Yes.
Well, we do know the one golfer, at least one.
The one golfer at the British Open.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
And he shot a great score. Yes, 46%. No, 54%. Some of the quotes I shot.
46% yes?
Yes.
Wow.
Here's one. The entire 2014 season.
Wow. And that's not John Daly, we're assuming.
No, because this is
he was sober by then, right?
I don't think he was really on the... Was he playing much in 2014 on the regular tour? Probably not.
Mm.
You know? And back
46%.
Then, but I think back then he was on the lap end. He had the lap end, so I don't believe he was drinking. I don't think he would drink at that time. So
46%.
46% yes.
Wow.
Me, I can't have one beer. I'm afraid to have one beer on the golf course because it'll affect.
Well, because typically when you're playing in our neck of the woods, it's really hot, and alcohol. You know, just in my experience, even just having one beer in the heat just makes you feel, ugh.
So there you go. In sports, in other sports, I actually did my parents. I actually watched a little bit of the NFL last week. It's my parents. Started talking to my parents about the NFL. They really don't know what the debate is about it. And my mom, we got back home. She said, I want to watch. And so, of course, I watched. And my brother walked in and said, how come you're watching the NFL? I thought you weren't watching. I said, Mom and Dad are watching. If they wish to watch it, I'm not going to walk out of the room.
Right.
They can do what they want at their age. And if they wish to watch it, that's okay. And I'm glad I haven't been watching. Have you seen my team lately? No, I didn't watch
yesterday. Your team is slowly disappearing, apparently.
Well, I didn't, back to normal. I didn't watch. I don't get the Sunday ticket anymore,
right.
So I didn't watch. I'm back to where I am now, making my own decisions. When my parents are there, they still make the decisions. But all I know is one of their players quit at halftime.
Yeah.
So I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm not coming. What happened?
I'm surprised it was just one.
He quit. He said, "I'm retired. This team sucks so bad. I'm just quitting at halftime. I'm leaving."
You know, the last person I can remember leaving a game at halftime was Troy Aikman in the Pro Bowl. Remember when he went home? It was in Hawaii that year, and he decided, "Oh, I'm just going to get on a plane." He got on a plane in halftime and left.
Really?
Yeah.
Now wasn't he going to play the second half? Or going to put?
I don't know if he was supposed to play the second half, but he got on a plane. Certainly, you would stay. And
Vontae Davis, I think the guy's name is.
Yeah.
Just we really stink.
Yeah.
I quit. You know, I'm retiring. I'm done. He just walked out.
Yeah.
And they were depleted. Apparently, I was reading about it. They were depleted. They didn't have a lot of, you know, they didn't have enough defensive people. He just said, I'm done. This team's ridiculous. I'm just.
Right.
They are the worst team in the NFL, though, right now. So, boy, I'll tell you, great. The other thing I want to point out just about the NFL, because I saw this a lot of people on the left that was back and forth on social media. See, Nike stock is back up. See, it's a good thing. It doesn't matter whether Nike stock is back up or not. All that matters is the message. We had talked about this beforehand. We mentioned that Nike stock was down, and we mentioned the effect that we believe it will have on the NFL. But we looked at the audience, you know, we looked at the demographics who buy Nike shoes, and we said, look, it might be that they could increase it. And if they increase sales, it'll show you the culture war that we're involved in.
Because
all that matters is the truth. What does Colin Kaepernick stand for? And I'm amazed how many people have no idea. I talked to probably at least 10 people. Said, do you know what Kaepernick did? They really didn't know. They didn't really know. Every single person that I talked to had no idea about the pig socks that he wore. The cop pig socks. All it shows in the culture wars, because we have gone through the day in and day out, we thought it was important to what Kaepernick was actually promoting. And then last year, when the catalyst for it became Michael Bennett, who lied about the Las Vegas cops, and he became the catalyst for the kneeling last year. Doesn't matter whether it goes up or down. It's the message. It's the truth of the message that they're promoting.
Yeah.
Colin Kaepernick was promoting the hatred of cops. We believe it's because, and we're not alone in this, we believe it's because he has been influenced or taught that communism, socialism is the best way to go, and so you need to start knocking down the institutions of America. He wasn't talking about racism.
Right.
He was indicting all cops. That's why he wore the pig cops. Colin Kaepernick's is about cop hatred. Nike now, the image that Nike wants to make their millions or billions on, is that we hate cops too. That's the if you agree with the message, fine. But we want to make sure that people know what Nike's message is. We hate cops and will support people who hate cops, who demonize cops, not just an incident, but all cops. And we'll also support people because we support the kneeling of people like Michael Bennett, who lied and will lie about cops. So it doesn't matter whether their stock goes up and down. It's what is the truth of their message? What does Nike want to make their money off of? And they can do whatever they want. You can have whatever message you want. We just want to make sure that it's clarified how they're making their money. and what their message is. And that's Nike's message now. We hate cops. Buy our shoes. It's that simple.
And again, the number of people that are willing to support that, if they don't know that part of it, that's on them. Because if you don't know the whole story, why would you support something? Why would you support a movement if you don't know the whole story behind it? If you don't know the entire history? But that's the country we live in. When a number of people can't tell you the three branches of government, I don't expect them to follow everything from Colin Kaepernick.
866-90-RUD-EYE.
It's crucial that you keep your truck and yourself cool. One way to maximize the performance of your AC system is by avoiding refrigerant leaks. The compressor is a pump that pressurizes and circulates the refrigerant in the air conditioning system. If your AC system has a refrigerant leak, the compressor will not receive the correct amount of refrigerant needed to function properly. To avoid these leaks and to stop them before they come worse, conduct a visual inspection of your AC lines and components. If you see dirt and oil accumulating near an AC line connector or anywhere else, you likely have a refrigerant leak near that location. Stop into a truck service location near you to have your AC system checked before the compressor starts to feel the summer heat.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RUD-EYE. Let's go to Doug in Bethesda, Maryland, about Judge Kavanaugh. Hi, Doug. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. I love you guys. You've been a big help to me the past 6 months. Had a broken leg, and you've helped me through some tough times.
Wow. Thank you.
Thanks.
My thought, listening to you, was we've got the perfect witness to the truth and time conundrum. And his name is Richard Blumenthal. He's sitting on the dais. He's an arbiter of integrity. And ask him to explain his combat service in Vietnam. Like I say, I live in Bethesda, and I live with these people. And I think that is fair game, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any concern.
Witnesses coming out of the woodwork.
Right.
We've got one sitting there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a whole number of them. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, how long has this been going on?
Well, these people don't have mirrors.
Well, look, he lied about serving in Vietnam and then said he had misspoken about it.
Right, exactly.
You know, so think about it.
Stood with veterans.
Yes.
And used them as props.
Right.
And it didn't.
That's integrity.
And it didn't affect him at all, did it?
No.
His service.
No. No. Not at all. Nope. Great reminder, Doug.
If it weren't for double standards.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, no joke. Yeah, thanks, Doug. We appreciate it. But you know, that's the case. And it is often on the left that you see that double standard over and over again. You know, the whole, how dare you? Well, I never. Actually, we can show that you did, and you have. And of course, that is the case. Look, I think when it comes to the Kavanaugh accusation, I think this thing's going to play out over the next few days and then be done, because there's nowhere else to go. If there were evidence, any kind of hard evidence, something tangible that the accuser could show about Kavanaugh, we would have seen that, and that would have been revealed at the very latest in the Washington Post story.
Yeah, now remember, I mean, he did serve, but he didn't serve in Vietnam.
Not in Vietnam,
right. As he has stated.
You. So, there you go. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carling, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Also, you know, we talked about the stories not widely covered while we were gone. One of them we thought was a huge story, and that was the announcement from the federal government that the United States is now the world's number one producer of oil, which we just went, wow. Think about that. Think about in our lifetime. If you're in your 50s or 60s and you go back, your 50s, your 60s, or your 70s, and you go all the way back, you go back to 1973, which was the last time that we led the world doing that. And then the gas crisis in 74. Remember the gas crisis?
Mm.
Anybody old enough to remember the gas crisis where I got a job at a gas station and the lines were over a mile long to get gas.
Yeah.
And it was odd and even days that you had to go and fill up. Now, they didn't last, gas lines didn't last long. But, you know, they, to that point. But I remember a couple of weeks where they were just huge. How do I know? I worked at a gas station and they were all full service at that time.
Hmm.
I don't know how we ever closed.
Because of the crisis, you mean?
Yeah, I can't remember how we...
the lines were so long?
Right. I can't remember how we ever closed it. Okay, sorry, you people that have been waiting in line for... I think I only worked afternoons. I don't think I ever had to close. Maybe we didn't. Maybe it was 24-7. I don't know, but...
Yeah, it was... I don't remember much about it because we most often lived on an Air Force base at the time, and I didn't drive. So I was too young,
and so I think of all that. Then the Nixon and the price controls that were put on.
I remember the stories about it being on the news.
Yeah,
and I also remember thinking, why don't I ever see that in real life? And the answer now is very clear, because we were always on an Air Force base, and so my parents bought gas on the Air Force base. I don't know that it was much different on the Air Force base, but I have to assume that it was to some degree.
And then remember, any time there was a conflict anywhere, why were we at war? Oil.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was about oil. We wouldn't be at war if it wasn't for oil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the way up in going into Iraq.
Oh, sure.
We did it for oil.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to do anything for oil anymore, do we?
Well, we talked about this years ago when we were, you know, the whole drill baby drill thing was, you know, going on. And we said, look, if we're talking about, this is during the Obama administration, if we're talking about all the benefits of it, one of the great benefits, if you believe that we shouldn't go to war over every little thing and you believe we go to war primarily because of energy, because of oil, then you have to believe that having, being self sustained in energy, in oil, would be a positive, so that not only does the situation essentially temper when it comes to any geopolitical skirmish or even discussion. Remember, Ahmadinejad, when he was president of Iran, could say a number of things and the oil markets would go crazy. Well, the global markets, and it's different for Brent because we don't produce Brent here in the States, Brent crude, but still, if we are at some point, and we will be, self-sufficient, and now we are the number one producer in oil, well, then we don't have to react, and the markets don't have to react to every little thing that someone like an Ahmadinejad might say. Did you see his comment on Kaepernick? He tweeted about Kaepernick. Wow. That's a ringing endorsement if I ever saw one. but if you look at all the benefits, obviously being, you know, self-sufficient, one day we will be. But being the biggest player, then we can, and now that we can export raw crude, the world can be our customer, but also the markets and the market prices are tempered when it comes to any kind of geopolitical threat or just words by someone like an Ahmadinejad.
But that was, I thought, such huge news. Mm-hmm. To me, it was, and again, I'm coming from my own perspective of sitting, with you for the last 13 years and mm-hmm. having to deal with the people that we were running out of oil, and now we're going to be completely owned by the Middle East, and the United States is gone because there is no more oil. And we're like, oh, come on.
Right.
It's like, oh, you guys don't understand. And all of a sudden, the peak oil people disappeared. They magically disappeared. And we had always stated, even when we had, because I remember when we were doing this show, we were still talking about the great potential of what we had for oil and natural gas.
Yeah.
And so that goes up to, what, 6 years ago when we started, 6 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
When we started, you and I started on Red Eye.
Mm-hmm.
It was still a huge issue. That, look, is during the Obama administration, we can still become self-sufficient. We can become, back then we were talking about, we can become the world's leading producer of oil and natural gas. People laughed.
Mm.
And you think about all the energy, all the money, all the political rhetoric, all the elections that have been run on the concept that we have to depend on others for our energy.
Right.
And here we make it to the point last week, last Wednesday, when the announcement came that we are now the world's leading oil producer, this country.
Yeah.
And it was a nothing story. Nothing.
Right.
I find that amazing. Another story that really came out over the weekend from Fox News, and to us, I think this is the big story, at least to me and you and I. You were saying you really couldn't find the story many places, and this was the testimony of Lisa Page from July came out
right
before the House Intelligence Committee. Fox got their hands on the deposition, the closed door deposition.
Mm-hmm.
And as the headline from Catherine Herridge of Fox News has it, Lisa Page testimony, collusion still unproven by the time of Mueller's special counsel appointment. By the way, it's still unproven now.
Right.
But they went back to John Ratcliffe's back and forth with Lisa Page about the text that, texting between her and Peter Strzok. And it said the text was highlighted by the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, in his recent report about the handling of the Clinton email probe by the FBI and the Justice Department the day after Special Counsel Robert Mueller's appointment to the Russia probe on May 17th. Strzok and Page discussed whether Strzok should join Mueller's team. Who the F, one more assistant director versus an investigation leading to impeachment? That was a question mark. Strzok texted on May 18th. According to the Inspector General report, Strzok later continues, quote, "You and I both know the odds are nothing. If I thought it was likely, I'd be there, no question. I hesitate in part because my gut sense and my concern, there's no big there, end of quote. The transcript shows Ratcliffe read the text exchange nearly verbatim to Page and asked her to explain it, specifically if the lead investigator on the Russian collusion case, Agent Strzok, believed the odds were nothing and that he had a concern that there was no big there regarding any collusion. And she gives the typical bureaucrat answer.
Hmm.
No, I don't think though. I think it's a reflection of us still not knowing. It still existed in the scope of possibility that there would be literally nothing. Probably not nothing, as we probably knew more by that point. But in the scheme of the possible outcomes, the most serious one obviously being crime serious enough to warrant impeachment. But on the other scale that, you know, maybe an unwitting person was in fact involved in the release of information, but it didn't ultimately touch any senior, you know, people in the administration or on the campaign or and so the text just sort of reflects that spectrum, end of quote. During the deposition, she said she was not trying to be cagey.
Right. No, she was trying to be Clinton, Bill Clinton. Depends on what the definition of is.
Well, I think it's clear what you know, as we've always said, the email said. I've been the lead investigator. There's nothing there.
Nothing. And we've known this, obviously, but her testimony and Catherine Herridge's work here at Fox News, revealing this testimony, basically confirms that. I mean, this is one of the things that we have known, but if you needed it, if you needed further confirmation, then
well,
this is it.
Well, is it May 2017 is a key month because FBI Director James Comey was fired by President Trump, and Mueller was designated then the special counsel because of that.
Mm-hmm.
In August, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who also promoted, who appointed Mueller, wrote that the still secret scope memo spelling out the boundaries of the special counsel investigation, the text and page's response, congressional sources said, raised significant questions about the probe's predicate and whether by the summer of 2017 it had already shifted to an obstruction case, not Russian collusion.
Hmm.
But interesting, here's the point that I'm bringing up. If they all knew there was nothing there, if they all thought, as the lead investigator of the FBI Russian collusion thought, no, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Then they knew the obstruction case right from the beginning had no merit, because what was he attempting to obstruct? They knew as investigators already that there was no crime to try to hide.
Yeah.
There was no crime to try to obstruct. That's what they knew inside the FBI at that point, which means then as soon as Mueller was appointed, remember, he brought Strzok aboard, the lead investigator. The lead investigator didn't communicate to Mueller. There's nothing there. Well, then we need to look for obstruction. Obstruction of what? There's no crime.
Which is why you are supposed to have a crime, an identified event, before you assign a special prosecutor in the first place. That was the idea of it. Because in creating that law that allows essentially Robert Mueller to do what he's doing now, that's what you... There must be a reason. There must be a real assignment. Otherwise, the threat is what? Well, anybody coming in. Did they do anything illegal to get elected? We must assign now a special prosecutor to essentially look into anything and everything, a post-vetting process, if you will. You know, I saw the story, one of Obama's ethics czars, what the hell is that? Is saying Manafort's testimony is going to bring Trump down.
How?
Your side has been saying that for the better part of 2 years now. For well over a year and a half, you've been saying the same thing. This is it. This is it. Remember Cohen? Oh, sorry. Lanny Davis lied. As if they know what Manafort's going to say. They don't. This is, again, casting further doubt. The president, by the way, can end this week. We're being told, again, that he might declassify that information this week.
As Wall Street Journal reported, Manafort's legal people told the Wall Street Journal, there's nothing there. He's going to cooperate on Russian collusion.
He's just trying to get, basically not get a longer sentence and added on to his current sentence from the first trial. That's all this is about.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So with the whole Kavanaugh thing, there's not really, unless new information comes out, which I don't see what that new information would be on this case, unless there are other accusers that come out, it's going nowhere.
No, I don't see it. I don't see it going anywhere. I don't know that it's going to be, because I don't know that Grassley would even call the accuser as, you know, to testify during the process. If there is nothing else substantial in nature to add to this, the only thing you're going to have is the possibility of essentially changing the votes by some marginal Republicans. So Collins, Flake,
Murkowski.
Murkowski, are those going to change? That's the question. Is it going to change those votes? That would be enough. That would be enough to throw the confirmation right there. And will it do that? We'll see what happens over the next few days.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. In the news today, Brett Kavanaugh, his accuser, Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court nominee, his accuser came forward yesterday after an article in the Washington Post. Christine Blasey Ford, in an article published by the Washington Post, identified herself and then went into the specifics of allegedly what happened over 35 years ago at a high school party. Now, again, it's just her allegation. She said she never told anyone until she went to couples therapy with her husband. Her husband claims that in the therapy sessions, she did say Kavanaugh's name. The therapist said, you know, in the therapist notes, there is no name listed there. Hmm. We also know Mark Judge, a conservative writer, is also accused of being the second person in the room, even though he unequivocally denied that on Friday and said it never happened, as did Kavanaugh, and the White House also coming out and stating again yesterday after the Washington Post article that Kavanaugh again stating that no, these allegations are completely and totally untrue. So what happens from this point? We really can't go much further. There are no witnesses except the one witness who denied that it ever happened. So where do we go from this point? Either this is where it ends, mm-hmm. or she testifies, Mark Judge testifies, and that would take a day.
Yeah, there's really not going to be, as Lindsey Graham said, while he welcomed, you know, an opportunity to have her be heard, the accuser, it should not delay the process. And it likely will not, because if there were new evidence, something tangible, a note from Kavanaugh apologizing for his behavior or something to that extent, then you might have something more there. But if that had been the case, then we would have heard about it. We would know about it by now. That would have been revealed in the interview with the Washington Post. There's no doubt. Because you would be looking to provide, if you're the accuser, as much as possible to back your story, your accusation here. So I suspect it is not going to go much further other than the back and forth of what we will see on Capitol Hill. I don't know that they will call the accuser, that Grassley would call the accuser to testify.
She hasn't agreed to testify.
And she hasn't agreed.
Right.
So that was just a statement by Lindsey Graham after basically a question along those lines. But Senator Grassley would have to initiate that process. And he, in fact, his comment over the weekend was, it's disgusting that it's coming about all these decades later that these accusations are coming about. Disturbing, I think.
Mrs. Ford is a research psychologist in California, where she teaches in a consortium with Stanford University. Mm. A university spokesperson did not reply to requests for more information. She graduated from an all-girls school in Bethesda, Maryland, not far from Georgetown Preparatory School, where Mr. Kavanaugh attended. A 2014 edition of the Alumni Magazine says Mrs. Ford is a professor of psychology and statistics and worked at Stanford since 1988. She was among thousands of mental health professionals and researchers who signed onto a Physicians for Human Rights letter to the Trump administration in June, denouncing the administration's immigration policy that caused family separations at the U.S. border, according to a copy of the letter. She also works as a biostatistician and has co-written more than 50 scientific books and publications. She, according to the Wall Street Journal, uses her professional name, Christine Blasey, and has made 3 donations since January of 2017, totaling $42 to ActBlue, an online service that provides a one-stop donation platform used by Democrats seeking office. Mrs. Ford provided several previously unreported details to the Post, saying she had discussed the alleged incident in 2012 when she and her husband Russell were in couples therapy. The therapist saved her notes, which described Mrs. Ford recounting being assaulted by students from an elitist boys' school, but did not name Judge Kavanaugh, the article said. The therapist also noted that there were 4 boys involved, which Mrs. Ford said in the Post interview was the therapist's error. She said she did not tell anyone about the incident, worried that she would get in trouble with her parents for being at a party where teenagers were drinking. But she told the Post that the alleged assault had damaged her, hindered her ability to have healthy relationships and with men, and contributed to long-term anxiety issues. Mrs. Ford also took a polygraph test administered by a former FBI agent and provided the results to the Post, which the newspaper said indicated she was being truthful when she said during a statement summarizing her allegations that they were accurate. So,
Yeah,
there's where we are at this point. You're not going to have a scenario where Judge Kavanaugh takes a lie detector test.
Nope, that's not going to happen.
So you have nobody who can say that it happened, nobody that she told back then. In fact, she never mentioned it to anybody until therapy in 2012. So
the question is really, does it cast enough doubt to change the votes for Murkowski, Collins, Jeff Flake? That's the question. And keep in mind, if that is the case, then what happens then with those 3 individuals in particular? Because it sets a precedent where, well, any accuser, and keep in mind, we don't even have any other people saying, well, there was always a rumor back in high school that Brett Kavanaugh was a guy that, was very aggressive, toward dates or towards girls or whatever it might be. I mean, you have essentially right now one person. This isn't the Harvey Weinstein thing. Harvey Weinstein, when it came out, then you had more and more Hollywood types coming out and saying, oh, well, yeah, well, we knew about it and we had heard about it. Even those that weren't, a victim of his knew about the rumors but never said anything. Well, unless you were to have something, like that situation, there's really nothing to add here. You have one person making the accusation. She admits she can't remember where it took place, even. She admits there was drinking involved and everything else. So it doesn't create a pattern of behavior. That doesn't mean that it won't create a doubt in the minds of a Murkowski, of a Collins, or a Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake, of course, we already know, is not a big fan of the current administration, the president in particular. So, he's not up for re-election, so he really doesn't need a reason to vote against Kavanaugh. Although, you know, there might be something where in the future he wants to get back into politics, and you have to consider, you know, all of those items in the future, what kind of effect it might have if people on Capitol Hill are to believe an accuser based on, again, their story and no real backing of it. That's what this comes down to. Something that happened decades ago.
Well, it comes down to the evidence that this actually happened, and
right.
You don't have evidence, you have allegations.
Yep.
And so if all you have is the allegation and you have the other party that is not accused of being the initial perpetrator, which would be Kavanaugh, but the other man, was it Mark Judge, I believe, mm-hmm. is his name, the conservative writer who said, never happened. Never saw Kavanaugh act that way
right.
in any way. And now people going through his history, he's written a book, this Mr. Judge has, on his teenage drinking and how he blacked out at times. And that's being used already in liberal publications mm-hmm. as saying, okay, you're not doing Kavanaugh any favors by that one has nothing to do with the other.
Right.
And so there's where we are at right now. But again, I don't see where this goes. Even if she testifies, nobody has said she's agreed to testify, and so if she doesn't agree to testify, then it ends. It ends with the allegation, and it ends with she said, and then the two being accused both saying this never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Judge, I mean, you bring him in to testify for what? I'm not going to testify. It never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me about it. The only question is, did I know her? But you're asking her to testify in an incident where she can't give you the time and place where it happened.
Right. Well, and this was the statement essentially days ago by Kavanaugh. It never happened. And nothing like this. I've never done anything like, I didn't do this, and I've never done anything like this.
What would make the story worse and cause problems for Kavanaugh would be if more people came forward, more women
yes.
came forward.
Right. Or even classmates that said, yeah, there was a rumor, it was kind of known that he behaved this way. He was aggressive when he was younger. And
with the 65 women from high school and I believe college that, mm-hmm. that said that they know him in a letter saying, no, this is not the Kavanaugh.
That's not him.
That that they knew. Now, that has nothing to do with the specific evidence of whether this incident happened.
No,
but what it does discount is I don't believe I knew 65 women in college or in high school and college combined.
It just,
who would remember me? It's just the fact that he is somebody who apparently was quite popular, quite well known.
Right. It just goes to character, basically.
Right. It goes to character, and it goes to a number of women who aren't going to come out against him,
mm-hmm.
who knew him.
Right.
Because that's the whole point. I mean, there's 65, if you didn't know him, you wouldn't sign the letter.
Mm-hmm.
These are all women that knew him, which is quite a few women to know somebody in high school, I think.
Mm-hmm.
At least from my point of view. But then again, I
right.
really can't look at me as a perfect example, can you?
Mm. No, you cannot.
In other news, and this we thought this was big news last week.
Mm.
U.S. government announcing that the United States now is the world's leading producer of oil.
Yeah, it's a big deal,
and it's a huge deal. Now we're already getting flags saying, "Well, then how come oil isn't dirt cheap?" We didn't say we were self-sufficient in oil.
Nope, we're not there yet.
When you look at it right now, the biggest thing keeping oil prices high right now, one of the biggest indicators of it, and they may go down because supplies are increasing and the projection for demand worldwide is predicted to slow.
Mm-hmm.
So we could see, as we've seen during the fall and winter time, where we know in Texas gas prices then go below $2 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the response we got, you're my question, we said, wish we could question these people who are you saying that it's not true? Are you saying you don't believe the figures?
Right.
We're not sure what the point is.
Yeah, you can debate. And because one of the responses that we got was, well, if it were so plentiful, then we would see lower prices. Well, it is not to say that we are the only producer. We're the top producer. In other words, we produce the most. It is not to say that there aren't other producers, many other oil-producing nations. It is also not to say that we are self-sufficient. When we reach the point of being self-sufficient, that will be a major game changer. But that's not going to happen overnight. We're not going to see that happen, you know, over a few months' time, even. It's going to be a period of years, and I don't make that prediction. I have no idea what it will take to get there. And we also have to consider that, and we've learned this here recently, that there is value to trade with your friendly counterparts. There's the value to that.
Well,
being self-sufficient is one thing, but do you cut off all imports at that point or put tariffs on foreign oil at that point, and what would that do to the global markets? That's going to be a very delicate situation to maneuver.
Well, we're down about 3 million barrels of oil that we import.
Mm-hmm.
Already we're down. But yep. What's keeping oil prices high right now, right at this moment, is Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the sanctions that the president is putting on Iran, because in order to force them into a new nuclear deal, which is to stop all exports of Iranian oil.
Mm-hmm.
That's also caused the world oil markets to go up. I think India yesterday coming out and stating that they're not going to import any more from Iran either. Mm-hmm. So the dominant, and neither is the United States. So, of course, that's what causes it. What you can't answer, because you can't answer what doesn't exist, we don't know what oil prices would be if the United States was not producing the oil that we're producing now, which is almost double what we were 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What would the price of gasoline be if that was not happening right now?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that right. can't be answered because we don't know. We're not in
right.
that particular situation. But we know from back in 2008, 2009, we're not paying over $4 a gallon.
Right.
Or $5 a gallon in many places.
It's not $147 a barrel as it was at its highest point in the summer of 2008. And so, well, you know, but it is still a huge positive in that we are increasing production domestically. And that will always be a positive. And that the world is becoming more and more our customer instead of the other way around.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Seth Meyer with USDA's World Ag Outlook Board points to one notable change in the latest crop report vis-a-vis corn.
Even though we made almost no change to global production, we lowered Argentina plus Brazil 2 million metric tons with offsetting increases elsewhere.
Why is this important?
It matters because these two countries provide a fair amount of competition to us. So that crop that is traded comes off shortly before our own crop, and so therefore it's a reduction in competitive supplies on the world market.
Which is providing more export opportunity for U.S. corn farmers?
We added to that export demand in the 17-18 crop year, so we increased exports 25 million bushels and cut carry out 25 million bushels because we have seen strong counter-seasonal demand.
He also notes that logistics difficulties in Brazil are slowing shipments of corn there relative to soybeans because soybeans can fetch a higher price. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Still massive flooding and will be for a couple more days in North Carolina from Florence. My gosh. I mean, over 40 inches of rain. We're talking about, they expect 45 to 50. I mean, we're talking four feet of rain.
Yeah, the worst is not over, they're saying, in some areas there. And one official saying, it could be weeks before they get all of the power restored in that area. All the roads around Wilmington are essentially blocked and shut down. Many of the schools are closed, of course, in that area. Diesel fuel, impossible to find in and around that area. So people should know if they're headed to that area, especially truck drivers. And for Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
As the remnants of what was Hurricane Florence continue to move in through the Appalachians, we'll see additional rainfall systems, which could top over 15 inches. Further inland, the rainfall will cause new areas of river flooding, flash flooding, and even the potential for landslides along the southern and western side of the Appalachians for the next couple days. We'll see Seattle 65 and sunny today, L.A. clear and 84. Dallas high temperature today around 90 under partly cloudy skies. For Chicago, we'll see continued fog and then sunny and 80. New York City, a 20% chance of showers, high today around 80. Atlanta, mostly cloudy, 88 with a 20% chance of storms. Miami, 89 with those typical afternoon thunderstorms for this time of year. Starting off your Monday, there's a look at your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Their fingers. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary. 866-90 Red Eye. You ready for our audio cut of the day?
What do you got?
Ocasio-Cortez on with Jake Tapper on Sunday.
All right.
So, of course, it's how are you going to pay for all of this? Think about this.
Mm.
Well, maybe she doesn't because she's a shoo-in in her district to win.
Right, right.
So, because I was thinking, wait a minute, you've been asked this question for a month. You haven't been able to answer it. Are you going to come up with something? Remember, again, maybe, and I said, look, Cynthia Nixon a couple of weeks ago, but she's out of the race now in New York,
mm-hmm.
when she just said, ah, look, let's get single payer. Let's get all this done. We'll worry about how to pay it later on.
Right. Right.
Just get this done. We'll worry about paying it later on. And I went, wow, that may be the answer. And so I was thinking maybe Ocasio-Cortez would use that. She didn't hear, as you will hear. But Cynthia Nixon lost. But we knew she'd lose anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
knew she wasn't going to win in New York in the primary to Cuomo. We knew she. I thought she did great in the debate.
Yeah.
By the way, is there going to be a Cruz, Robert Francis, or Rourke?
I don't know. I don't know if that's ever going to happen or not. You would think. I'm assuming at least in October.
We down to two now? We were on vacation. Mm. I didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
I just saw the poster of the debate.
Mm-hmm.
See the poster?
Mm-mm.
Shows Robert Francis, Beto, Robert Francis as, you know, dressed up in his whatever that band he was in.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then it shows Cruz like a gang member, tattoos and everything else all over the place. It was like a big match coming up between the two.
Oh, yeah, okay. Right.
It is actually pretty good. But this is a couple minutes long, but I want to play this because she goes on and on, doesn't answer the question. And finally, Jake Tapper just says, okay, you're not going to answer the question. And she just smiles and he moves on. You should never allow someone to do that. But here it is. Okay, here we go.
All right. Your platform has called for various new programs, including Medicare for all, housing as a federal right, a federal jobs guarantee, tuition-free public college, canceling all student loan debt. According to nonpartisan and left-leaning studies friendly to your cause, including the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities or the Tax Policy Center, the overall price tag is more than $40 trillion in the next decade. You recently said in an interview that increasing taxes on the very wealthy plus an increased corporate tax rate would make $2 trillion over the next 10 years. So where's the other $38 trillion going to come from?
Well, all right. So he actually did lay it out, did he not?
Right, right.
Okay, lay it out. All right. Let's see if she answers the question. Here we go.
One of the things that we need to realize when we look at something like Medicare for all would save the American people a very large amount of money. And what we see as well is that these systems are not just a pie in the sky. They are, many of them are accomplished by every modern civilized democracy in the Western world. The United Kingdom has a form of single-payer health care. Canada, France, Germany. What we need to realize is that these these investments are better and they are good for our future. These are generational investments so that not just they're not short-term band-aids, but they are really profound decisions about who we want to be as a nation and as and how we want to act as the wealthiest nation in the history of the world.
All right, so did she answer the question?
Nope.
No, she didn't answer the question. Okay, let's go back to Jake Tapper now.
Right, now I get that, but the price tag for everything that you've laid out in your campaign is $40 trillion over the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. I understand that Medicare for All would cost more to some wealthier people and to the government and to taxpayers while also reducing individual health care expenditures. But I'm talking about the overall package. You say it's not pie in the sky, but $40 trillion is quite a bit of money. And the taxes that you talked about raising to pay for this, to pay for your agenda, only count for two. And we're going by left-leaning analysts.
Right. Well, when you...
Before I let it go, see, instead of doing that, I'd say, answer the question!
Yeah.
He decided to go the longer route.
Well, he decided to give her a pass.
Yeah. Okay, now, here it is. Okay, here she goes again. So he's asked her again to explain where you would get the $38 trillion over that 10 years.
Look again at, again, how our health care works. Currently, we pay much of these costs go into the private sector. So what we see is, for example, you know, a year ago, I was working downtown in a restaurant. I went around and I asked how many of you folks have health insurance. Not a single person did because they would have had to have paid $200 a month for a payment for insurance that had an $8,000 deductible. What these represent are lower costs overall for these programs. And additionally, what this is a broader agenda. We do know and we acknowledge that there are political realities. They don't always happen with just the wave of a wand, but we can work to make these things happen. And in fact, when you look at the economic activity that it spurs, for example, if you look at my generation, millennials, mm-hmm. the amount of economic activity that we do not engage in, the fact that we delay purchasing homes, that we don't participate in the economy and purchasing cars, etc., as fully as possible, is a cost. It is an externality, if you will, of unprecedented amounts.
So,
Now, did she answer the question?
Nope. Still no.
I would love just to sit and talk with her to find out if she has any idea how economics works.
Apparently she doesn't.
Just any idea, just to find out what's in the, you know, get her out of the official type of interview thing and to find out, look, do you really have a clue? Do you understand how anything actually works? All right, let's see how Jake Tapper responds, okay?
All right.
Ready? Here we go.
Student loan debt.
I'm assuming I'm not going to get an answer for the other $38 trillion, but we'll have you back and maybe we can.
We're still missing $38 trillion.
Yeah, but again, she just smiles as if, okay, I got away with it.
Yep.
Fine.
Yeah.
I don't have to answer the question. I'll be on again next week not to answer your question.
Because you can't pay for it. You know, if you can't get past Jake Tapper, you're not going to get past most people, and he gave you the pass. In fact, that's his version of giving you the walk right there. He gave you the pass. But the fact of the matter is, it's not going to happen. And that's not going to happen in a debate. Because it's not Jake Tapper making the decision, it's the people making the decision. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, no matter what you still have to pay for it. How will you pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
The entire package, everything that you've talked about. Mm-hmm. And you think about it, I think that Ocasio-Cortez is a benchmark moment in American politics because she is doing what we have suggested Democrats do. And we said this, what, 5-6 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Offer everything. Say free everything.
Well, and go big. We always said going to make a political promise in your campaign, then you might as well go big. So whatever the number is, go for the biggest number you can. Well, I mean, there's no bigger number in terms of political numbers than zero, free. That's the biggest number of all. because it's not going to cost you. It's going to cost everybody else. It's actually going to cost you a great deal.
Yeah, it is
going to
cost you, right.
You, your doctor, your health plan. Oh, they promised you it wouldn't, but they were lying.
Well, when Ocasio-Cortez said that, remember last time she did talk about the fact that we would drastically increase corporate taxes.
Mm-hmm.
What is corporate taxes? Who does corporate taxes hurt the most?
The poor. Poor and the middle class.
The poor and the middle class are hurt more. And the thing that's that the worst thing about it is, and this is to show you that the left truly does not care. And we talked about this. Remember when Chicago passed in, or not Chicago, but Illinois, the temporary corporate tax increase late mm-hmm. at night, going mm-hmm. back, what was that, 6-7 years ago when they
right,
did that?
Right.
And you
literally
and I,
in their last hours of office, that those outgoing Democrats were
right.
passing that law.
And we said they, you know, well, we're going after the corporations. No, you're going after the poor and the middle class. You're hurting the poor the most.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you're hiding it. You're putting a stealth tax on the poor. You actually are so unkind and evil. If they're going to do that, why can't I do that?
Sure.
Right? They are so evil that they put in hidden tax on the poor. We're not going to even let them see it directly. Well, she said the same thing about a month ago when she was on, I don't know if it was Jake Tapper or whatever,
mm-hmm.
when she said corporate taxes, drastically raise corporate taxes. Well, then it's not free. They're going to get hit with it. They're going to get hit with it hard because corporations will pass on that tax to the consumer,
yep.
which means the poor get hurt the most.
Yep. And that's exactly the reality of it all. But it is, I think, indicative of where the American voter mindset is, with some American voters, not all, of, well, we don't care. We believe in the Cynthia Nixon approach. Just pass it, and then we'll pay for it later.
I still believe that the biggest lie of all has been, from Democrats, the demonization of corporations, of industry, and capitalism, and therefore the ability to tax it, which is the biggest hidden stealth tax on the poor and the middle class. They have been completely successful in brainwashing the poor and the middle class that somehow they're punishing the corporation, yet in their actions, what they're actually doing is putting a hidden tax on the poor and the middle class. And year after year after year, they go back to the same well.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats that are poor and the middle class are still voting for those Democrats who are putting a hidden tax on them.
And wondering why the cost of living in their state is so high.
Right. And I will say one thing from the they have been absolutely, totally successful in brainwashing their own constituents that somehow we're punishing them when they're punishing you. And year after year after year, you continue to buy it.
Remember in Pennsylvania, the soda tax? And they got angry. Local lawmakers got angry that they were putting up signs demonstrating first that the retailers, demonstrating why the price of a 6-pack or 12-pack of soda was so high, and the fact that they were passing it along.
Yes, wasn't it the mayor?
Yes. Couldn't believe that these greedy retailers were passing along the cost of
yes,
government.
Yes.
How dare you?
Remember that?
Yeah.
And we're taxing them, and they're passing the cost of that tax onto the person who buys the soda pop.
Yes. And that's the argument you'll get from the left.
You shouldn't do that.
It's not our actions that are costing you. It's the fact that these greedy corporations are passing it along to you when we charge them more. How dare they do that?
866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Diesel Fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement
and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, something we were just talking about during the break, and this is where Ocasio-Cortez was talking about, well, for example, that if you have health care and all these things are given to you, it grows the economy faster. Based on what model?
Right.
That seems to be a narrative now coming from those that are promoting a much more socialist agenda. If everything is there, well, then if people have the health care and they have everything that they want, the young people, if they have it, then they'll go in there and they'll just generate billions in the economy. Where is that proven that the growth rate of socialist countries, the GDP growth rate, is greater?
Well, because she contradicts herself. She said at one point, because if the implication is that you're saving money, you won't have to spend your money on health care, and you're going to put your money into other areas. She earlier had said, we're already spending this money on health care as a nation. That's her point, you know, to justify the expense. Well, see, we're already spending this money. A, no, we're not spending anywhere near that. And B, you just counteracted, if we were, you just contradicted yourself by saying you would save money. Well, no, if we're already spending it, you're not going to save anything. And that's what it comes down to.
All right, now you're making me laugh.
Yeah, well, because it is laughable. Her argument has been from the beginning.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.